And we'll get into Mayan prophecy, what does NASA know, and so much more with our guest Gilbert Erickson when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Gilbert Erickson, our guest, the author of The Millennium Prophecy. Gilbert, what does NASA know?
They know that Wormwood is headed this way. They know that there's not a darn thing they can do about it, and they're scared spitless.
And they won't tell us.
Well, hopefully tonight, George, it won't make any difference after this. But remember, Richard Hoagland put it, the lie is different at every level. And these people are so hidebound and caught up in their own deception and self-deception. Who knows what they'll really actually do, whether they got brains enough to be honest. You know, that's a real good question. Now, as to what they knew and when they knew it, is that what you want to get into now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
1982, the Pioneer 10 and the Pioneer 11 satellites were tasked to look in the direction of Uranus and Neptune.
Okay.
They were, at that time, just check any planetary chart for where the planets were located, and that's the direction they were looking. Out there along what astronomers call Right Ascension 18. Now, Right Ascension 0 is in the fall stars, that would be your vernal equinox. Right Ascension 6, that's out by the constellation Orion. In fact, his right armpit star, Betelgeuse, or whatever it is, that's about Right Ascension 6. Right Ascension 12, that's the spring stars, and Right Ascension 18 is the summer stars. So they were looking up and down that line from the ecliptic plane south, and they spotted it. Wormwood is there. Okay, that scared them enough to where they got a lot of very immediate money, and within 1 year they had deployed the IRAS satellite, I-R-A-S. And when you take a look at the IRAS satellite, that thing was a piece of work. Now, supposedly the IRAS satellite, the bolometers were chilled with helium, and it ran out of helium gas after a year. I think it was Kerry Cassidy or somebody found someone who said that no, it did not. It ran at least five more years that he knew of. So the IRAS satellite had a large solar array on top of it. The odds are pretty close to 100% that the IRAS satellite was also equipped with, you know, pumping mechanisms, a cryostat, so it could chill the helium back down from gas back down to liquid. And with liquid helium, you get within a quarter of a degree of 0 degrees Kelvin. You can never get to zero, but you can get pretty close. So there isn't much that you're going to miss on the infrared spectrum. You can see it all. Well, the IRAS satellite was tasked to look in the same direction. And there's no doubt that they got very clear pictures of Wormwood then, because the IRAS would not have missed it.
Interesting.
Okay? Now, when you check your planetary charts, sure enough, Neptune and Uranus, both of them, December of 1983, were out there nearly right on top of Right Ascension 18. That's where Wormwood is coming inbound from.
Okay.
All right? So we've made radio history tonight, George. We've told people where Wormwood is coming from.
And where to look. At what point can an amateur astronomer find this?
They can probably find it now.
Okay.
And the people down in Sierra del Tololo in Chile, the people in Sydney and Perth, Australia, any of the observatories, in this southern hemisphere, can see it now. All they got to do is just check Right Ascension 18 and adjust for parallax, because it's going to be inside the orbital radius of Neptune. Okay, from the northern hemisphere, the first big observatories that will be able to see Wormwood will be the Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope in Tucson, Mount Graham? Kitt Peak or whatever it is down there. That is a beautiful piece of equipment. It's got two 11-meter reflectors, but they're set up as binoculars, so it gives them the effect of a reflector assembly over 30 meters in diameter.
I've always wondered why the Vatican was interested in astronomy so much.
Duh. So all the Vatican has to do now is turn their beautiful VATT telescope assembly out toward Right Ascension 18. Just pick it up from the tip end of Sagittarius. It's between Sagittarius and Scorpio. Scorpius. I keep wanting to say the other. Between the Scorpion and the Archer, Sagittarius, right off the tip of the arrow, or if you look at Sagittarius, it looks like a teapot. the handle is on the left side as you look in the, you know, the southern sky, and the spout is on the right side as you look at Sagittarius. And that tip star on the spout of Sagittarius is about right ascension 18 and 5 minutes.
Gosh, this
so the
is
line
like a
is right
book,
off the tip of the Sagittarius arrow. And that line all the way down, just search that line all the way down, adjusted for parallax, and wormwood will show up if you have an infrared receptor mechanism. So the first telescopes here in the United States that can see it will be the Keck telescope at Mauna Kea, because that's up 14,000 feet, and they've got really big reflector mechanisms. Then the VATT in Tucson, Mount Graham, and then finally Palomar. Just
do you
about
think
that order.
The fact that it is in Revelation, do you think the Vatican would announce before NASA that this was coming?
Did you want me to speak for the Catholic Church?
No, I want you to speak for Gilbert Erickson.
We tried to get this information to the Vatican. I don't know if we were successful in getting it through, but we really did try. We managed to get it to one of the cardinals. What happened to it after that, I don't know. But basically,
unfortunately, Monsignor Balducci is not alive anymore. He could have carried this for you.
Yeah, if there's anybody that can make a connection between you and the Vatican, we really should, just as a matter of professional courtesy, we should probably share this information.
It's Paula Harris. We've got to get some of this to her.
Okay, well, whoever can get, you know, to the pontiff and then, you know, order these people to dig that thing out and search that line. When it comes up to where that it's visible in the northern hemisphere, you should be able to get very, very good pictures. Now, remember, you have to adjust for parallax as we move away from the June 21 centerline position of, you know, on Earth's orbit. It means we're moving away from that summer solstice line. So it's fairly close in. It's not out, you know, like painted on the celestial sphere. It's close. It's getting up close and personal.
Will it ever start reflecting light from our sun?
Yes. As it approaches the ecliptic plane, the light of the sun will reflect off of it, and you'll get that rusty red color.
Okay. Okay.
But as it's coming in, anyone with infrared can see it. It's coming in on right ascension 18. And, I mean, it's dead center on right ascension 18. All you have to do is sweep left and right to make sure that you've got your parallax correction.
At what point do you think... Man, you're saying a lot of this is happening in the summer of 2009. This is like now.
Yeah, that's why I called Lisa to try to get connected with you. The idea is to get this information out so that people can start preparing. If we get the list I just read of the six, you know, the breaking of seal number six, and that list of things happens, all hell is going to break loose here on the planet. But it gets much, much worse next summer, May, June, July next year, because if it happens this year, then it means it's going to get in close and personal, capable of sharing atmospheric gases. Now, remember, wormwood is packing a major, major methane atmosphere. So when it comes in contact with Mars or Jupiter, that doesn't mean much. Venus, Mercury, doesn't mean much. But when it comes in contact with the atmosphere of the Earth, you've got the Earth supplying oxygen. And then wormwood throws these little pellets of iron oxide dust that glow red hot, and fire literally rains down on the Earth from the sky.
As predicted in Revelation.
Revelation chapter 8. And it says, when you read that about wormwood, it says one-third of the Earth was burned up. Let's change that wording just a little bit. One-third of the Earth will be incinerated. You get caught out in the open when the methane gas is pouring into the atmosphere, you're cooked. You're
and this
fried
is
cooked.
This is next year for
this
that?
This would be next year. Yeah, if we get the confirmation events that, you know, the list we just read this summer, then that's what happens next year.
And if they don't happen this summer, everything's pushed back.
Just slide it back a year. But it's already here pulling on the planets and disrupting things. So, you know, I felt like, hey, what the heck, my reputation doesn't matter much. But if we can save a few lives by getting some advanced preparation, even if I'm wrong by a year, let's save the lives, you know. And we can always throw another number in the book.
Could this be one reason why so many governments are building underground bunkers, some say cities, for their own chosen few?
Yes, isn't that interesting that the governments of the world are building massive underground complexes? Here in the United States, we've got them where, right out here in California, China Lake, and up in Utah, we've got
Area 51. And I still think there's something under the Denver airport.
And
too.
A massive, huge complex under the Denver airport. And by the way, Denver connects to these other places underground. Yeah, that what they're trying to do is make the world safe for lawyers. Exactly what all the lawyers are going to do in the future, Lord only knows. I don't know how in the world they're going to turn lawyers into farmers. That would be
lawyers. Well, you mean they're all politicians, right?
Politicians are mostly lawyers. They're going to go out and get their hands dirty and go farming? I mean, the assumptions are just absurd. And we're not the only ones. We have probably the most massive complexes, but the Russians have massive complexes. They're doing the same thing in Norway that we know of, probably Sweden that we don't know of.
They're creating a seed bank.
Oh yeah, massively in Russia and also massively in Israel. So you know, there's some places where there's massive tunnel complexes that are being dug to protect the politicians. You know, make the world safe for lawyers, and just let everybody else burn. But when Wormwood gets in close and personal, and one third of the Earth gets incinerated, that's pretty rough times.
Now, will you be able to see this with a night vision goggle?
Oh, you mean Ed Grimsley's? Trick
you, so you know Ed. Okay.
Well, I listen to Coast to Coast.
All right.
Listen to your songs.
Too. He's got third generation.
Third generation? I'm going to say probably yes, but it would depend on whether or not the glasses have extended infrared spectrum enhancements on them. I know we had that technology available to us all the way back in the days of Vietnam, but whether or not his...
I don't think he has that.
Okay, well, it may be visible anyway because the rays of the sun will slowly begin reflecting. You'll be able to see it with those glasses before you'd be able to see it with the naked eye. But the best equipment is still infrared right now.
Gil, what will be the absolute bona fide proof that would allow you to say, folks, I told you so?
When a third of the Earth is incinerated?
How about something easier?
Well, if we get the list I read before, you know, which is on the website, and that happens this summer, I guess that would constitute telling. George, this is not fun stuff to talk about or try to warn people of. It's about as much fun as being told by God, okay, go and tell your best friend that by the end of next week, come Saturday next week.
Or, you know, it's like a doctor having, but listen, it's like a doctor having to tell someone you have cancer. He doesn't want to tell you, but he has to.
Right, but it's about like having to tell your best friend by the end of next week you're going to be in a coffin and you've got to go give them the news. There's nothing fun about it. This is not fun information. I'm just trying to tell you what I think the revelation says as I try to read it as literally as possible and line up the science to support it. You see? And yeah, doctors have to do that too. And that's got to be about the suckiest part of being a doctor. You try to learn how to heal people, and then you run up against something you can't do, and then you have to give the news. Is that fun or what?
For years, scientists have theorized of this extra planet. We'll call Wormwood the planet.
Mm-hmm.
For years, there have been some out there that have said, folks, we've got an extra body in the solar system. Everybody's laughed at him, Gilbert. You're not laughing at him.
When you string all the information together, Alexis Bouvard, 1821, the Bible, the designer of the universe says it's there, Revelation 6, 7, and 8, and he says it's coming our way and it's got our name on it. Let's see, who else? NASA, their crazy games, the planet charts for the days that they were looking, the work of Zachariah Sitchin and Robert Sutton Harrington. Dr. Harrington spent 12 years. He was associate with Tom Van Flandern
right
at the Naval Observatory. He spent 12 years, running simulations, 24/7, something like 330,000 simulations to try to find out, you know, which direction was Uranus and Neptune being pulled on. But he mostly used the data from Uranus because there's more orbital round trips. And he came to the conclusion that it was somewhere out about, you know, roughly guessing, about right ascension 16, which puts it very close to 18, and that it was coming from the southern hemisphere, and the odds were 5 to 1 versus it being the perturbations coming from some other direction. 12 years, and that's a guy with a PhD in physics grinding the math the hard way. And, you know, they make fun of him. And they shouldn't have done that. And, you know, like I say, when one-third of the Earth gets incinerated, nothing's funny anymore.
I was going to say, what's left for those who survive this?
Oh, boy. Then after that, you get the rise of the New World Order. And then you're going to have the release of the spirit of Antichrist. And the telltale sign that he's been let out of prison will be a massive infestation of a new form of insect that are poisonous locusts. They just eat everything, and if they're carrying a stinger of some sort.
Oh, my. Like a scorpion?
Like a scorpion. It says it burns like a scorpion when it bites you, but the interesting thing, it's packing a cocktail, probably viral, that has a reaction that makes you so sick, you stay sick for 5 months on end.
That's
a nasty piece of work.
It's a bad bite, I'll
That's
tell
a
you.
A bad bite.
Doesn't Revelation talk about a couple witnesses who are witnesses to these events?
Yes. Yeah, the Christian church is going to be removed from planet Earth because our turn to speak in God's name is just about over. See, as a Christian, it's my honor to tell people about Jesus, that they can have salvation in Jesus. That's an honor. He's the creator and designer of the universe. He's the sustainer, Colossians 1. He's the one who knows how it all works, and he's offering relationship, direct royal family relationship with himself and God the Father. So that's my honor and my right as a Christian to do. If you want to be saved, you have to ask a Christian who knows how to tell you how to be saved. The Bible says there isn't any other name by which you can be saved. Okay, when the Christian church is removed, then somebody else gets the chance to speak in God's name. The problem was that back in the days of Daniel, that time was promised. Now, here's the interesting twist. That time was promised to Israelite people. Daniel 9:24. It says 70 weeks, it means 70 weeks worth of years, have been decreed for your people and for your holy city. And the first thing on the list, you know, is it talks about the finishing the transgression, all the nasty stuff. But the two witnesses, plus these 144,000 Israelites and Jews, will be scattered all over the world, and the two witnesses will be in Jerusalem, and they will be able to tell people what's going on.
Are these witnesses here now? They must be.
No, they are dispatched from the throne of God the Father. They actually, if I had to guess, I would guess one of them is Enoch, and the other one is Elijah. And the Old Testament in Zechariah refers to them as the sons of fresh oil. They pour out the golden oil, the ceremonial oil, right there at the throne room in heaven. He dispatches them from the throne room in heaven in front of himself and sends them to the earth to be witnesses. There'll be a lot of media coverage of the two witnesses because these guys will call down fire out of heaven. They'll decree all sorts of destruction. And whatever they call out, that's what happens. Podunk, Iowa will be incinerated tomorrow.
If that's what they call out.
Whatever they call out, that's what happens. And they will be there, you know, live in real time. They'll be able to photograph, you know, take pictures of them. They'll be able to speak to the cameras and so forth. And it says if anybody tries to assassinate them, it says fire comes out of their mouth and they are burned alive. So the two witnesses are some pretty nasty dudes. But it looks like, and that's, again, it's a guess. I think one of them is Enoch and the other one is Elijah. And these people, plus the 144,000 Israelites and Jews, are going to be the replacements for the Christian church to speak in God's name. So that's what's coming. That's what the two witnesses, the ministry that they have. Yeah, they haven't arrived yet, but the day that the Christian church is removed, they will show up in Jerusalem. They'll be there.
Millennium Prophecy, do you get it off your website? Anyplace else?
Right now it's just off the website. We're still trying to get that up and running. But, you know, it's really hard to get a good website going. Especially one that coast-to-coast won't crash.
Exactly. Stay with us, Gilbert. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about Mayan prophecy next on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, next hour we'll take your phone calls with our guest, Gilbert Erickson. Have you subscribed to the After Dark magazine yet? Well, you can very simply by calling 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com. Gilbert, tell me a little bit about what you believe the Mayan connection is to all of this. Again, uncanny that they're picking similar dates, albeit 2012, but tied around the solstice.
Well, for one thing, the December 21st, 2012 date is the winter solstice position. And if Wormwood is going out, crossing the ecliptic plane at that time, you can expect that there's going to be major destruction on or around that time, before or after, as the node rings of Wormwood, the gravitational node rings, start pounding down on top of the Earth at that position. The closer the Earth is to that solstice line, either summer or winter, and the node rings come through, the greater the damage will be. The revelation says, with respect to the outbound activity, that there be an earthquake so great, it's greater than any earthquake there has ever been since man came to be on the planet.
Oh, great.
Yeah, Revelation 16. Check it out. It's a rough one. That's what the Bible seems to suggest for 2012.
In your opinion, and let's take the spiritual aspect out of this for just a second. How did this prophecy come to be?
The Revelation or the Mayan?
Yeah. The Revelation and the Mayan.
Well,
because it all seems somewhat similar.
Well, in the Revelation, John was the prisoner on the Isle of Patmos. He'd been banished, at least temporarily. And while he was there, which it's just an island off the coast of Turkey, the Lord appeared to him and gave him the materials and said, write them down. I'll show you stuff. Write down what you see. So in terms of the Revelation, it was given from Jesus himself. And so the book really is the book of Jesus Christ about the end times and the tribulation events and the events that will happen after. But it was written by John, and then it came back to the mainland and started the distribution from there. Probably the first reader of the book of Revelation was Bishop Polycarp, who was one of St. John's friends.
So many civilizations have always thought that they were in end times, yet it never occurred for them. Mm-hmm. Why do we think that we're any different?
Okay, you want my take on it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, first off, the end times refers to the times of the Age of Grace, or the Church Age, near the end, just before the tribulation. That's a general, hazy, conceptual notion. As it turns out, that could loosely be referred to, the events of this set of years in the 21st century, and the bulk of actually the 20th century covers the end times. The tribulation, then, is a seven-year period, and then after that comes the millennial kingdom, where Jesus actually takes up residence on planet Earth. Now, the problem for the Christian church was that he didn't come back. So the church kind of got discouraged, and what they did was they interpreted the Revelation using three looking glasses, three models. One of them was preterism, which says, well, okay, it's all been fulfilled, forget it. That's the end of it. The other one was millennial, which was, he's not coming back, let's don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one was the one you referred to, which is called historical or historicism. Historicism was the tendency to take the events of history at that time and see the events of history at that time as being fulfilled by some of the things that were described in the Revelation. Okay? The problem, when you look at the prophecy, it's referred to directly in Jeremiah, where he says these things are sealed up until the end times. So the problem was that the church was not really going to be able to get a grip on Revelation prophecy, because for the most part, the bulk of the church age it would not apply. So it didn't matter whether they understood it or not. They were going to live their lives. They were going to die normal biological deaths. And then everything would be clear. You know, their consciousness would have been lifted away from their little tent of flesh that they were dwelling in for a while. So it didn't matter whether they understood it or not, because it really didn't apply to them, to their generation. But in the last times generations, they really need to kind of get ready and think about it, because these are events that are going to smack them in the face. And in a way, it was Jesus giving the church a kind of a heads up of the things that were coming before the tribulation, at the last part of the end times, and then during the tribulation, for those who get left behind. So it's going to be a rough period of time just right before, and then during the tribulation, it's really going to be bad.
Can these events be changed at all, Gilbert, or are we stuck with them?
No, they're decreed. They're all decreed. Okay? And that's the hardest part of all.
So we can't alter the future.
There's no way you can alter anything. This is stuff that God has said, this is how it's going to be. And if you want references on that, we have that. That'll be posted shortly on the website, but it's Daniel 9:24. 70 weeks have been decreed for your people in their holy city. And then Daniel 11:36, he will prosper until the indignation is finished, for that which is decreed will be done. And Zechariah 11:16, for behold, I'm going to raise up a shepherd who will not care for the perishing. And he describes the Antichrist perfectly. And God is taking responsibility for doing this. And there's the sin of Satan and Abaddon the destroyer and the fallen angels is going to be allowed to play out one last time. And then God cleans house.
You have talked about UFO activity tied into some of this. Tell me about that.
I know the Christian community is going to really take me to task for this.
I think they already are.
they probably will. There's a couple of places that, as I, you know, what happens as you start mulling over this and, you know, really trying to think it through and, you know, gritting your teeth and grinding and grinding and grinding on these ideas, every once in a while, rather strange insights develop, and it's just really hard. You know, they don't come on a schedule that you want. They come when they come, that's all. When I was reading, as you read study the Battle of Armageddon, there the language is symbolic. It says he wears a vesture dipped in blood, and he spits swords out of his mouth and destroys his enemies. A very flowery, you know, picturesque language. But when you cross-check that with the Battle of Armageddon, with, say, the stuff in Zechariah, where it describes how they will actually die, what you are seeing when you put the two together. Remember, this is your friend Patrick O'Hearn.
Mm-hmm.
Scripture should comment on Scripture. So what you do when you start assembling the puzzle pieces, basically what's being described isn't a white horse, isn't a bloody cape, and isn't a bunch of swords. It says the plague that these guys will be struck with, it says their flesh will rot on their bones while they're standing up, their eyes will rot in their sockets, and their tongues will rot in their mouths, and that's before they can hit the ground. So in my opinion, if I had to guess, I'm going to guess that when the Lord comes in and makes that pass over the Valley of Megiddo, where there'll be, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20 million men lined up to try to assault Jerusalem and prevent him from taking the throne, he's going to be coming in a very, very large battle cruiser. And I'm going to say it's a UFO. And I don't care if it says it's a white horse. As long as it comes in with terawatts of horsepower and he unleashes that beam weapon and cooks his enemies where they stand, that sounds like a UFO to me.
What about a false flag, something created by mankind to give us the illusion of something like this?
I don't think it'll be very false when they start being cooked. The Battle of Armageddon probably won't even last 5 minutes.
That fast.
That fast. He rolls in. Imagine one of those big Cerulean cruisers or something. Big, hairy, you know, like from Star Wars.
Sure.
And he rolls in on that thing. They line up on the Valley of Megiddo. Jesus is standing on the bridge, dressed in white. No, he's not going to wear the bloody cape. The bloody cape, a vesture dipped in blood, means that he bears full authority. He wears the authority to shed the blood of his enemies at will. As they line up, the weapons officer says, target acquired. Jesus turns and looks at him and he says, fire at will. and they unload that beam weapon. And that thing has all the hallmarks of microwave, gamma, and Lord only knows what other kind of radiation that can cook people to a crisp standing up before they hit the ground. And it says that they're animals, they're, you know, donkeys, camels, etc. They'll be cooked, too, before they can hit the ground. Can you imagine being on the receiving end of that?
No, wouldn't want to be.
Yeah, now that doesn't sound like a white horse to me, but that sounds like terawatts of horsepower unleashed in a nasty, nasty weapon. And there's no survivors. So you can imagine some sort of a massive battle cruiser coming in with a lot of horsepower attached, and he just gives the order, fire. And it is done, exactly what he says to do, destroy them. It is done. They carry out the order. There was one other interesting little tag phrase that shows up in the Gospel of Mark, and it says, he will call for his elect from the four something or other of the earth, and then it says...
Four corners
of the earth, and it says, from the farthest reaches or the farthest expanse or stars of heaven, the farthest end of heaven. I said, wait a minute, read that again, to the farthest end of heaven. Geez Louise, are we talking about the farthest end? That could be, you know, 12, 13 billion light years away. How are they going to get here? Were they going to ride or walk? I don't think so. He's going to be sending some ships. Come on, you know, they have to traverse.
They're bending space and time. It's
the vacuum
of
space, right. They've got to traverse huge distance, and they've got to traverse, you know, inhospitable conditions. How is it going to be done? Sounds to me like some sort of cruiser is going to go and round up these people. So if they're scattered out all over the universe, you know, different star systems on different assignments, and they're busy for 7 years doing what he says to do, when it's time to come back home and, you know, claim the kingdom and start setting it up here on Earth, he has to go and collect those people. And they're not going to be walking to the farthest reaches of the heaven. That could be a long ways away. That sounds like UFO to me.
You may be right about that one, too, Gilbert.
Well, how are they going to walk? Come on, George. You know, that's a long ways away. You don't just...
What about coming from other universes, other parallel universes?
That's a possibility. You know, the universe could actually be a universe that's part of a polyverse in this particular time-space continuum. There could also be other universes. Of course, Michio Kaku, you know, regular guest, he makes the case that you have to have 11 dimensions in order to explain just the one we've got. So the chances that there could be other universes, yeah, that's also possible. You really can't discount anything. When you get into this supra-level world of physics, I mean, it's just so hard to get a grip on. Just the concept of time-space eludes most of us. So polydimensionality, that's really tough, you know? But, anything is possible. I'm not going to say, you know, that he can't do, that he just picks something he decides he can't do. I'd rather doubt it.
Well, here we are rolling into July, so, you know, we're in the heart of summer in another few weeks, truly in the heart of summer. These events should be pretty easy for us to ascertain, because they're all huge events, aren't they? I mean, we have earthquakes on this planet every day.
Yeah,
you're talking about big events.
Yeah, not the list I just read you.
No.
Enough to shake the planet and produce tsunamis and tectonic shifting and, you know, intrusion of iron oxide dust. And, you know, I mean, that's quite a list. And that's all up on the website so people can look it up. You know,
well, if these things all occur, Gilbert, I'm going to make sure every amateur astronomer and professional astronomer who has been on this show points their telescope that way.
All they have to do is, you know, Sagittarius, right, Ascension 18, all the way down to the horizon. And when that thing pops up above the horizon, they'll be able to see it. Infrared equipment first, Ed Grimsley's glasses second, and finally you can see it with the naked eye.
And that would be about when, the naked eye?
Good question.
Then it's too close to see, isn't it?
Well, when it gets that close, you know, it's going to be starting when it's naked eye, then it's going to be reflecting the light rays of the sun. That's when it becomes visible.
And then it goes away again. What happens as it starts leaving?
Well, first what it does is it comes in closer and it makes another pass the following year. And at that point, it exchanges atmospheric gases with the Earth.
Right.
So that's the events that you read in Revelation 8, where one-third of the Earth is incinerated.
That's the dangerous one.
That's the first major danger, yeah. We're going to have probably millions of casualties with this next event here shortly. Then it arcs up over the sun on its perihelion arc over, and then it comes back down on the other side, and the events of Revelation 16 unfold. And they are nasty. When that's finished in the Revelation 16 events, 2012 and beyond, we're going to actually have to redraw the maps of planet Earth. The Earth will look different. It's going to be that bad.
Give me a percent of probability that you think you're right for this summer of this year for these events to occur.
Again, George, I don't want it to be true.
Don't forget, this is on tape. I can always pull it out again.
Yeah, I feel, 95-plus percent, but, I don't want it to be true.
Oh,
but
Gilbert, that's all right. I mean, you've prefaced that, but you're saying there's a 95% possibility that all these are going to occur. Okay.
Yeah, basically, when I interpret the revelation this way, what you get is a one-to-one mapping that lines up with six out of six events already taking place exactly as prophesied, in the order as prophesied, and this would be the next one. So,
what about political world events, Gilbert? Like what North Korea is doing, the Iranian situation? Are they at all tied into prophecy?
Iran is later. They're not. I don't think they figure in on this end of things. But as far as North Korea is running on pretty thin ice. Anything bad goes wrong, they can be squashed like a bug. It's really sad. I know they feel like they have to make a lot of noise, but in terms of how they figure in, personally, I don't see it. But Iran is actually referred to in the Old Testament that there will be a highway coming in from Iran and another one coming in from Egypt. And it refers to them as Assyria, and Egypt as being part of a, kind of a buddy-buddy group that finally make peace with the Lord.
Well, let's hope somebody does, Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, absolutely. Name of the book, The Millennium Prophecy, the website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now, millenniumprophecy.com. We're with Gilbert Erickson, former Vietnam helicopter pilot who decided to go into this field, and he's done it in a very big way. These helicopters, you glad? Do you still fly them for fun?
I wish. Some of the stuff I used to fly around in rents for over $1,000 an hour. I think the last chopper I flew was a Bell 214. They probably rent for around $2,500 an hour.
Gosh.
Nice machine. Jeez, they fly fast. You get those suckers, cranked up. You can go 150, 160 knots flat out, and they're smooth. They're nice.
Every time I think of Vietnam and a helicopter, I think of Apocalypse Now, that movie, Charlie Sheen being hauled away right at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we acquitted ourselves reasonably well. We did a good job. I was proud of the job that we did in Vietnam. It was sort of sad, that the U.S. had predetermined, in the political circles that they were going to abandon the country.
Yes.
But, at the end of it all, we tried. I think we did a good job for, what we were allowed to do. And it was sad. And the fact that, I don't think that Vietnam even really wanted to get into it with us. Ho Chi Minh did his master's work in California. Did you know that?
Absolutely. He tried to convince us to partner up with him.
Yeah, he wanted to trade.
Yep.
He wanted to see if he could lift his people, Indochina, up out of the depression that they were in and try to speed things along.
We had other plans, I guess, Gilbert.
That was really pretty nasty because we drove him into the laps of the communist Chinese, and I don't think he really wanted to go there because there's a lot of ethnic ill will between those two groups.
Let's take phone calls with you. All phone calls next with Gilbert Erickson on Coast to Coast AM.